This podcast is brought to you by Amusement Warehouse Magazine, the industry's largest trade publication. We cover amusement parks, carnivals, fairs, festivals, history, safety columns. We really got it all when it comes to the amusement business. Only remaining print publication in the amusement industry on a regular basis. So if you're interested in what the amusement industry has to offer, subscribe today. You can subscribe by logging on to amusementwarehouse.com, carnivalwarehouse.com, or amusementparkwarehouse.com. Welcome to another edition of Amusement Warehouse Podcast. Today we have a very special guest, live from Gibtown, Mr. Bob Quesada. Thank you so much for coming on. We're just overjoyed to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
So, Bob Space Racers, I'm going to brag about you a little bit if that's okay. I mean, when you look at this company, which grew from your garage into a world-class, world-renowned place that's sold to every corner of the earth just about, games and equipment and all those things. Did you ever think, starting out in your garage, that you'd come to this level? Did you have that vision?
Never.
What was your thought process when you were first starting in that garage with the building the group game?
Well, we started out with Amusements of America. I was a carpenter, and a friend of mine had a couple of stands down in Daytona on a broadwalk, and he conned me into taking care of them for him for July and August at night, and I still work. And anyway, he left Daytona and went up to New England, played some fairs. So that's where I started. Wound up getting a booth down there and did my own thing down there. And then he kept telling me this is nothing compared to going on playing out fairs and stuff. So I built me a regular hanky pank trailer, had two games in it, 24-foot trailer, built it from scratch, and went up and played with Babe Ravona.
You're on Babe's unit?
Yeah, Morristown, New Jersey. I was from New Jersey, so I had relatives up there, my uncle and aunt. And we went up there for about 3 weeks and came back home and went back to work.
Did you play Flemington? Was he playing Flemington
then? Yeah, played
Labor Day?
Morris County and Flemington, yeah.
Then I
came home, and then we did that for about 3 or 4 years, and my wife got tired of doing a balloon pop, and she was up with Jack Mendez, go to a diner in the morning before we opened, and her and Jack started talking about a race game. And it went in one ear and out the other with me, and they had a paper napkin in there drawing on the paper napkin and stuff. And that's where it started, and we came home, and she kept on me and on me, and wound up buying a new trailer from Southern Truck Body back in the day. And I built my first game in my driveway in a garage. And Jack Mendez was in college. First year of college, and he came did the electronics, and that's where the first space race came to life. And then I still was working, and we take off maybe a month from work, and went up to New Jersey again and played Middletown, New York.
I managed that fair, now you know that?
Branch, do you?
The Orange County Fair, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I tell you what, back in the day, that was a great fair.
It was.
Probably still is. Had the races there.
Yep,
car
still
races.
Do. Uh-huh.
Any apple pie?
Yeah, no apple pie anymore. We still have Maxwell and all his concessions there.
Yeah, he's been here forever.
Yeah, forever.
Had them pop-up.
The walk-away Sundays and stuff.
Yeah. I go back a long ways with him. I've been in business 55 years. And that's where the first space racers came about. And then we was in Syracuse, New York on the Independent.
Excuse me one second, but the space racer, what was the game? Like, what was the object of the game?
It was the year we went to the moon.
Okay.
And we had the gantries black light. You remember black light?
Right, sure.
All the background was a black light. A friend of mine from Daytona Beach, John Roseboom, which just passed. His son works for us now. His son's been with me for probably 15 or 20 years. Hell of an artist. And he painted my first background. And we had the gantries my wife put together. They're plastic gantry kits, and everyone had a gantry and a rocket and meteors and all that, all in black light. At night, it'd stop them dead. We'd have them 10 deep.
Wow.
For a quarter.
And, that's amazing.
Anyway, this guy named Harry Subcheck from New York was a school teacher, and he kept hanging around the game and just fell in love with it. And he got a hold of me during the winter at the house. He called two or three times, and I said, no, I just built it for ourselves. I'm not interested in building it for anybody else. And so anyway, he talked me into building the first game. And so that was our first customer. And then from there on, I think I built that in my driveway. And then I rented a warehouse in Daytona, and it's still working. And we built two or three out of there, out of the warehouse during the winter. And then the owner that owned the contractor company that I worked for, we did commercial work. He'd come to, I was there on a weekend one day or at night, and he'd come by and he says, "Hey, you know this place we get our precast concrete slabs from is going bankrupt. You might want to go look at it. It's about 15 acres. So we went up, jumped in his truck, and went up there. I wound up buying that. And I wound up building our first building. And that's where we started.
Off to the races. Now, was this, excuse me, because I don't know the timeline, but was it like pre-water race? Was it the first true group game?
Pre-water. The first game was a handle game.
So just for our audience, the people that don't know, I mean, most games were one player plays one at a time, win or lose, and get a prize or not. And this was the first one where a multitude of players would play at the same time.
First unit was, I think it was 18 units at a quarter, 25 cents.
And that was all your little network with your wife and Jack all thinking about. That's, you know, a lot of people don't think outside the box. You just think, you know, okay, let me make another type of game, but one where multiple people played and raced against each other was a game changer.
Back in the day, Bobby Knoll had water games that he built. A good competitor and a good builder. And then I built my first water game to a New York guy that played small festivals and stuff up there, Victor Ketch. And that's the guy who got my first water game.
So was that your next game after the space race, or was
it
water
game?
Yeah,
it was a lunar lander. And so same kind of background, water game, and the lunars came down and landed. Instead of the rockets going up.
Oh, they came down.
They came down and landed.
You were really into that space theme.
Very, yeah.
That was big, I guess. What year was that about now that you were talking?
I'm looking for Jack Mendez.
Had to be post 69. So
yeah. 69, 70, something like that.
It's after the lunar landing and all that. Yeah.
I might be off a year.
And when was the first year of Gibtown here, the show? Do you know? I know you're probably the oldest exhibitor here, you and maybe Gary Otterbacher or something like that.
Yeah, me and Gary, I think we missed the first year. We missed the first or second year, and then we've been here ever since.
Now, did the show really help you with spreading the word?
Yeah.
Nationwide, because before that, it's, you know.
Just word of mouth.
Just people that see you and, you know, East Coast stuff. And
right. Just word of mouth. And then took a truck and trailer. You remember the year we went to Vegas for the first time? We went to the Stardust, probably before your time.
That was before my time, yes, sir.
And a guy named Maynard Ostro wound up buying the truck and the trailer from me. And I had to deliver it to Santa Monica, California. He had stuff at the World's Fair in Montreal, a good operator. And then he had the Circus, all the games
inside.
All the games inside,
in the Fun Zone, or they call it Thunderdome.
At the hotel. And they've been a great customer of mine
for forever. So you were selling a few to people, you know, friends and people you knew. And when did you know it was going to become a business?
When I bought that property.
When you bought that property.
And
you could see the demand then?
Yeah. I built, the first building was 80 by 200, had a removable end wall. And I had them in 80 by 25 foot, and had offices and bathrooms in all of them. And I had them all rented out. So I took the first 25 by 80 for my shop, and then had a guy doing candles, had Hawaiian Tropic.
Oh, really? T-shirts?
His wife was a, no, the...
oh, the...
Suntan lotion.
Suntan lotion, yeah.
His, back in the day, his wife was a stewardess. And so he rented from me for a few years. And then I needed more real estate. So I'm getting lost here. I built an 80 by 200. Before I finished the project, I wound up doing another 200. So it wound up, the original building was 80 by 400. Had them all rented out. And then as I needed more space, we had to take the renters out. So.
That's amazing. So you really, was the company called Bob Space Racers at the time? So always been Bob Space Racers.
Yeah.
BSR, interesting. It's just amazing. And you had to start hiring staff too, because you were building a thing.
Oh, yeah.
That's something you'd always think about when you're building in your driveway, right? The first time.
Yeah, for sure. Just me and my wife and Jack. When we first started.
And I guess the other good thing was you were testing them. I mean, by being a game operator yourself.
Very much so.
You knew what to do. You knew how to do it. You knew what worked and what didn't work. How to merchandise it and do all those things. When did you first break into the park business? Outside the carnival guys. Outside the carnival business.
Springfield, Mass. Ed Carroll, Sr. Riverside Park. I don't know if you remember that park in Agawam, Mass, right there by Springfield.
Right.
And he was my first park customer.
And was that pretty early on, or was it a little later?
Yeah, early on. It was a handle game, too. And I forget what theme it was. I think it was a space racer, space game. And I remember me and a kid I had working for me there in Daytona, helping me here and there. He worked for my dad at a pottery place. And we wound up going up there with a straight job truck and delivered that game, me and him. And then Jack came up and finished up the electronics. He had a little old motel right across the street, maybe had 10 rooms. And me and that kid was staying in that room, got up next morning and it had about a foot and a half of snow on the ground. He ain't never seen snow, and I didn't see much snow because I came to Daytona when I was in the sixth grade. And then Mr. Carroll seen us at the park, and he said, "Don't slack off on me now. I'm going to open this weekend." I said, "How the hell are you going to open with all this snow?" He said, "You watch me. I'm going to open." And he sure enough opened. And we got the game in and operating.
So did both ends of the business, the parks and the carnival, kind of hit you at the same time? The demand started to grow right away because you were...
Yeah.
What did parks have for games back then?
One of the first shows I think the first show we went to, or might have been the second show we ever went to, was in IAPA in Atlanta at the hotel. I remember going there.
And that was a long time ago.
Yeah.
And was it really well received?
Yeah, very much so. We were in the parking garage. And the ceiling was too low. I said, "Hey, man, you told me you had such and such high ceilings. Honey, I can't get the game up. It's not high enough." So I wound up taking acoustical panels out of it. And but we got it up, and we did some selling.
It was a big hit.
Yeah, we took Six Flags was a customer of mine here in Atlanta back then. And we had a shuttle taking potential customers back and forth to the park. And it's a good show. We've been doing IAPA forever.
Yeah. But you kind of grew up as the parks did to a certain extent. Because when you first started, the parks were not as corporate, not as big and together like they are nowadays. Now it's so big. But it's a big change selling to a carnival guy who just, you know, walks up, you've known for years, and he buys it. He's the guy that makes the decision, and selling to these big corporate parks now where you're doing long range planning and all those things. Was that a big transition for you to learn that area of the business and theme areas and do all the stuff you did?
We learned pretty good. We were operators and you know, we knew how to, not bragging, but we knew how to make money and give out merchandise.
Don't use the past tense, you still are.
And that's key is merchandise and making the customers happy. Taking time with the kids and sit them up on a counter, and that's what it's all about. I got a good reputation. We're a good operator, and we still have Bobby doing the Miami, Minnesota, Columbia's, Springfield, Mass, and Columbia, South Carolina, and then Stretch does Canada, Winnipeg, Calgary, Edmonton.
Now, you made that deal with Conklin, when was that, like in the 80s, I think, right, or earlier?
Yeah, the Royal American had it for years and years and years, and then when they lost it, Alfie Phillips with Conklin Shows called me because he was a customer of mine. He had a couple of my water games that he had on a Eastern Roadshow, what they call the Eastern Roadshow, and so I was with him with Conklin when he had the first year he had the contract up there. And we've been up there ever since.
Were you doing the C and E at the time too?
Yeah.
So big operation.
Big operation.
And those moves and all that stuff up in Canada are fun.
Edmonton to Regina was a killer. And then Jim Conklin finally put his foot down and said, hey, we're not doing this no more. So I think we closed early. We did close early. And instead of on a Sunday, we closed on a Saturday. And then I think Regina lost one day. So he made that jump.
And did you make the original deal with Patty Conklin, or was Jim in charge by then?
No, Jim was in charge then. Okay. And Alfie Phillips was his main man.
Yeah.
And then Frank Conklin came into the loop then. And I became really good friends with Frank.
Frank's a great guy, yeah.
And I was a good friend with Mr. Conklin. We just lost him.
2 years ago,
Great guy.
Did you know Alfie Phillips' father was like a famous diver? I was reading in the book there. That was amazing. Yeah. He used to have a diving show on the CNE. And
people need to stay on Alfie because he would make a hell of a book. We got more stories, and a happy-go-lucky guy. He's just a great guy. And
absolutely.
If somebody could convince him to do a book, would be great. Even Frank.
I tried to get Frank on the podcast. I talked to Tommy Coffing about it. I talked to everybody about it. He used to play my fair up in New York, the one we did in Long Island. Conklin Shows used to play it. Frank would come, and he was great. He was great to work with, and a great guy.
We did Yonkers with Frank.
Yeah, did you do Belmont and Aqueduct?
No.
Brookhaven?
We didn't go to Belmont.
Yeah, those were ones I ran for years, so he was up there doing that stuff. So as the games, you just didn't stop. You didn't just have the space race and a water race. You've been inventing and reinventing and going on and on. So what were some of the other biggest breakthroughs of your career? Like, what changed the game in the game industry?
As far as the arcade end of it, it was tickets. A guy named Gene Cram with Chuck E. Cheese. Back then it was Showbiz Pizza.
Yep.
And before it was Chuck E. Cheese. And he kept on us about our games to individualize the games.
They were too big, in other words, so they wanted to make
Single units, double units. And then we between the two of us, we came up with the tickets. Well, he already had the tickets in a lot of his stuff, and then we put tickets in our stuff, and you know, that just got us going on the arcade end of it big time. And we were a good player in the arcade end of it, and we still are.
An FEC thing,
FEC, yeah.
So making those individual games, was that something you wanted to do, or that something, did that seem like a good idea at the time, or was
well,
it?
Well, I wasn't too excited about it back in the day.
I could see that.
It turned out to be very good.
There's a lot of them with those individual games and the individual.
Yeah.
So when did you get the idea for the whack-a-mole? When did that come about?
What year it was.
Hey,
been a long time.
It's been a long time. So you'd hit the moles with the hammer.
Great game. Nice prize. Everybody. I had a patent lawyer and a lawyer from Ohio that I've had for years and years and years. And he called me one time. He said, hey, I need to come down here to Daytona and talk to y'all. I said, what's wrong with the phone? And now I need to come down here. So he wound up coming down here. And he's telling me, we get together, Jack and my wife, Jack Cook, Glenda, my daughter. We get together and he's trying to tell us that whack-a-moles, the name of whack-a-mole is as popular as Coca-Cola. Well, it went in one ear and out the other with me, totally. And waste of time bringing him down and etc. So it never, it stuck with my wife, and she just pushed Mike Lane, my controller, kept pushing him. Hey, I want to follow up on this. I want to follow up. What can we do? So we wound up, Mike wound up going to a licensing show in New York, and he landed a deal there. Like a handheld mole.
And, right, little game.
Yeah. And so that was our first deal on that. And then we wound up making a deal with, years later, we wound up making a deal, I think it was with Hasbro or Mattel. And that lasted.
And, that was amazing, right?
Yeah. This unbelievable.
And then you did the thing with Jim Cramer on CNBC where you made the special game for him.
Yeah.
He popped up, I saw that come out. It's like, wow.
He's a great guy.
That's, and the fame of it, though, just
and
came from...
I'll tell you one thing. He wanted me to come live.
Jim Cramer, you said.
Yeah, me, my wife, and Jack Cook, Glenda, my daughter, we all went up, invited us up there, and that game came out there, et cetera, right? So he wanted me to do live like we're doing it, that he does with all of his people. I said, Jack, you do it. No, he didn't want it. So here you talked me into doing this, and I didn't do it for Jim Cramer years ago.
Oh, my gosh.
Jim Cramer's a great guy.
Yeah, I remember watching it because Tony or your brother or somebody told me it was going to be on.
They surprised me. They surprised me with that, because I kept on with my controller, Mike, and my daughter heard me, Glenda. Cramer would always talk about whack-a-mole, you know, this week, a couple weeks later, he's talking about whack-a-mole. I said, what? We need to get a unit up there to him. So nothing happened. Nothing happened. So my daughter, Glenda, got tired of me saying that, so she got a hold of that lady that works for him, been with him for years, and she said, man, that's a great idea. Yeah, we'd love to do that. So Eddie Roseboom, our designer, you know, does all the drawings. And,
right,
and,
artist.
Yeah. And losing my train of thought.
You're talking about getting up to CNBC.
Yeah, and so we got all the artwork okayed. They loved it. And then, but I'm missing a story here. I didn't know this.
Right, they kept you in the dark about it.
They kept me in the dark on this. My daughter was doing this whole thing. I got that wrong. So I was in the dark. We were here in Gibbtown. And it was Jack's birthday or Jack Cook's birthday or something. And he says, hey, we got to take some customers out to eat tonight. I said, okay, no problem. So then we get ready to leave. I said, where are we going? And it was some bar, sports bar deal. What the hell are we going to a sports bar? I don't know. That's where the customer wanted to go. So we get there. Who's sitting out front in my wife's car? My wife, because she wasn't at the show. So she surprised me. What are you doing here? And it never did dawn on me. Then our guy, Eddie, he's there. My daughter is there. What the hell's going on? So we go inside. I still don't know nothing. What's happening? They knew
what time
what time it was going to be. When they had it on the TVs. What the hell they got CNBC on a sports bar here for? And then he rolled it out there, Bob Spacer, blah, blah, blah. That was good. And then a few weeks later, he invited us up there, and that was cool.
What were the figures? I forget. Were they Jim? Was it Jim Cramer's head or something? Or what was the?
I don't remember. I don't remember what the figures were.
I remember it was something cute.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
I could ask Tony.
No, I don't think Tony was.
What were the figures on the Jim Cramer whack-a-mole?
Jack.
What were the figures on the Jim Cramer whack-a-mole? What were the figures on the Jim Cramer whack-a-mole?
The figures.
Like, what were the moles?
Oh, that was a bear, a...
Bear and a bull.
Bear and a bull.
That's right, okay.
And Jim Cramer's head.
I thought Jim Cramer's head was on there. Okay, well... We couldn't remember which one it was. That's amazing. So the whack-a-mole, so did it become that popular just playing fairs and amusement parks, the whack-a-mole name? I mean, because there was nowhere else. It was just your game, right?
And the arcades.
And the arcades, but that's amazing power to be that popular. As popular as Coke, as the lawyer said, or whatever,
yes.
From just playing fairs, carnivals, and...
Unbelievable.
And events, that's... You got to be really proud of that. That's amazing.
Unbelievable, yeah.
I mean, a lot of people make their mark on certain things, but to really be a part of America like that, where you have one of the most recognizable things, it's really a thing. I mean, that's unbelievable.
Yeah, we've been blessed.
But what about the derby races and things? When did you come up with those? The roller balls and
yeah.
I had a roller ball with Duke Trombetti. Me and him bought one from you.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah. I don't remember what year that was.
It's probably 98 or 99, somewhere around there.
We sold a lot of them.
Well, what was
trailers and amusement parks. And then we did some, now we're into the... in the arcade, we're into the no attendant games.
Right.
And that's...
Save on labor.
Yes.
Was that as a result of the pandemic mostly, or how did that come about?
No, Jack Cook, came up with it and kept pushing it, testing it, and it's very good. Very good. Nice redemption center.
Mm-hmm. So your business now, how is it split between parks and carnivals and FECs? What's the majority of it? Or is it pretty evenly split?
Yeah, I don't know what the split is, but, we're doing good in all three of them. Family entertainment centers. Crazy. And carnivals, they keep on coming.
They keep on coming, right?
Yeah.
So you've met quite a few carnival owners over the years. You've been friends with and allies with and everything else. What were some of the memorable sales you made to some of these carnival guys? Is there anything you comes to mind when you're thinking about all the characters that have walked down these hallways here and past you and by you?
Some great characters. Like I say, we've been around for 55 years and We got a good, great name in the business. I'm proud of it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the other great thing is that you're operators too, because you operate the games as well. So you, you learn a lot.
Yeah, I mean, you get the bugs out of it, mm-hmm. and the do's and the don'ts. And anyway.
Same thing with ride manufacturers, the ones that operate them. A lot of, you know, ride manufacturers came from, they were carnivals first, and then they made them, and they worked the bugs out, and they did all the things that they're doing. But the electronics now on these games are just unbelievable, right? With the operator, the start and stop, and with the key fobs that they use, and the accounting systems. So the accounting systems have come a long way. And you guys did it, but, you know, back in the day, the operator would hope that the worker was turning in the money he was supposed to be turning in, and it was, you're just hoping, right? I mean, for things, but you solved those problems being out.
We did. And, you know, it used to be on a foot switch, remember? Yeah, and we've just come a long way on the accounting system. The electronics is just unbelievable now.
So now the owner is able to see how many people played, what money should have been taken in.
Right.
Press a button at the end of the night and have everything do it. So you'd have to be eagle eye over here watching his guy concert.
Yeah,
I mean, that was just a big game changer
big deal,
for you guys
big deal.
With all the things you did. I mean, it's just,
yeah.
I remember Duke when he first got the one that did it, he was like, oh, my life is so much easier now. I don't have to do all these things I always had to do. So who have been some of your biggest customers? I know you said maybe Ray Kavick shows, Guy Levitt.
Yeah, Guy Levitt.
Your controller was just telling us that he always wants to have the latest and greatest, right? Always buying.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
The newest version, the newest things that are going on, the newest.
We've got so many loyal customers, you know.
You do. It's unbelievable. It's just unbelievable. Watching here, the people that come by and the days you come here is unbelievable. It's like trying to meet the Pope. I mean, you're here, you're giving your blessing to everyone, and you're doing your thing. It's amazing. It's they can't wait to see you here. When's Bob coming? That's what I was here. Yeah, when's Bob coming? When's Bob coming? When's Bob coming?
Thank you.
That's all we hear about those things. You and Gary Otterbacher is always saying that you guys have been here since day one, pretty much.
Yeah,
you've been coming to the thing.
Great guy.
So you built like a great team around you to run this place.
We've got people been with us a long, long time. Alan Howell, Terry mm-hmm. Howell, Jack Mendez.
Of course.
His wife, Sandy.
Mm-hmm.
And
your daughter married pretty well.
Glenda, my daughter, my oldest daughter. My youngest daughter was in it for a little while. We had her at a park or two.
And so now it's in their hands. You still guide them a little bit here and there?
Jack and Glenda.
Jack and Glenda. Are you involved a little bit here and there?
Not much.
Not a whole lot?
Not
so
much.
Now you're into horses.
Yep.
What do you like to do with them?
I show halter in their physique, and done very well.
How did you get into that after you retired and you said, I want to get some horses? Or was it inspired from your rolling bull?
Jack Cook's son. Wanted a horse. We had a farm up in North Carolina, and he wanted a trail horse, and we got one trail horse, and then we got another trail horse, and from the trail horses, we wound up, JR's, Jack's son, started cutting horses, and wound up very good. He wound up in a youth hall of fame in the cutting, and is JR is in Houston. He runs a big company, him and his wife. They do all kinds of lighting for interstates and cameras and signage, and does a great job there. And he's got three girls, and they show in riding and etc. And then they show my halter horses too.
And that keeps you busy most of the months of the year?
I take off in the summer. I go to Petoskey, Michigan. We spend up there June, July, and August, September. And then from there, we go to horse shows Columbus, Ohio.
The big one.
Fairgrounds, Corduroy's Congress.
Corduroy's Congress.
We go to a world show in Oklahoma City.
Wow.
And we go to Fort Worth. And
you're keeping busy with that.
Yeah. Go to Ocala at the World Equestrian Center.
That's a big one too.
We just went there the day after Christmas for a week with my great grandkids. And them are great grandkids, three girls.
Congratulations. I just had my first grandchild, actually.
I do.
So, Gibtown, what do you think this year? How do you think things have, how do things look for the industry? How are we doing?
I think people are spending money. They think we're going to have a good year. And, you know, with the election, the way it turned out, people's got spark in their eye.
Absolutely.
Yep.
People buying, people doing things. I think, you know, the you've been here far longer than I have. I remember the old days when I was first around, I remember, but there's a lot of equipment here this year. There's a lot of things going on. It looks...
Very much so. Very much so.
I know it's harder nowadays because everything's cut, even for your business, right? Back then, you might build one kind of water race and it would just have the same colors and everybody would buy the same thing. Sellner told me this, actually, because I asked him, why don't you bring this ride? And they said, well, if I built a red Tilt-A-Whirl, it's fine. I just bring it here and somebody buy a red Tilt-A-Whirl. But then they want a purple bonnet. And then they want sparkly paint. And then they want this thing. Building it on spec was much harder. It wasn't, I don't think, that people weren't interested or didn't want to bring stuff. It's just for the manufacturer, it's a bigger risk because, God forbid, they want a little different color, a little different sound system, a little different thing. It was a whole different ballgame.
Gibtown looks like they got a full boat in here this
year. It does.
Year.
It looks great, I think. People are here. People are buying. And there's...
I didn't care for that deal where
they split. Yeah, I didn't either.
I'm putting the cards on the table. I just didn't care for that. You know, we need NICA and we need OABA big time. We all need to be together. And
right.
It's great. We're back together here now. We had a OABA deal in here last night, a welcoming deal, and then they had a party for the guy who has the radios.
Oh, Dale Hershberger.
Dale, 50 years.
50 years?
Yeah, he had a surprise party for him. He came in the room last night.
I saw a picture and I didn't really look at it and know what it was.
Yeah, he's been in business 50 years and they had a surprise party for him yesterday. That's cool. That's what it's all about.
And speaking of the OABA, somebody I know was inducted into the Hall of Fame a couple years ago.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you. That was an honor, big time honor.
It is an honor, and, but really, I was thinking about this the other day before I got the, I was so happy I was going to get the chance to interview you, but who else is, even look at Eli Bridge, you know, big names in this business, nobody has built, and I know I'm bragging on you and you're a modest person to a degree with the things, but nobody has built a business from our industry, from your little backyard, and I'm Jersey too, from Jersey, from a place like that to be such a global, I mean, you got a real company, you know, you're going all over the place, you're selling to Disney, you're being on CNBC, you're selling to Mattel and all these places. It's what you've achieved is just nobody else has even come close to doing it in any aspect of this business. And that's really something to be really proud of. It's remarkable, really, what you've done.
You know, God is good. I've been married 65 years with my wife, Joyce, and we worked together hand and foot the whole time. She worked in the office and with my daughters, Glenda, Karen, and we've just been blessed.
And you got a whole family over here of all your guys.
Yeah. For sure.
They look like they go to like your army over here, like they go to war for you. They're all around you.
We got married when we were 17 years old, run off to Georgia to get married. And
oh my gosh.
And we've been married for 65 years and it's just been a great adventure.
What a wild ride.
Wild ride.
I can't thank you enough for coming on. It's our honor and pleasure to have you.
Thank you, buddy. Appreciate
great guy.
Thanks for
spending the time.
Thank you for forcing me into it.
I appreciate it. Well, for everyone, I want everybody to, you know who you were and what you did.
Thank you. Love you guys.
Thanks so much.
This podcast is brought to you by Innovative Ticketing is the ticketing source made for the amusement industry. Our staff of professionals can guide you through your setup, assist with customer service, even on the weekends when you most need it, and help increase your sales through promotions that work. Innovative Ticketing is the ticketing source made for the amusement industry. Sign up today at innovativeticketing.com.